5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
I'm Brian Wilson alongside Larry O'Connor.
And joining us right now is Wesley Lowry. He is covering the riots or unrest in Milwaukee for the Washington Post. Thanks for joining us, Wesley.
Thanks for having me.
So it seems now, as more facts come out about this officer-involved shooting, that most of the political representatives of the Black Lives Movement folks, I'm trying to find my words perfectly here, are not necessarily focusing on the actual details of this shooting because it seems as though the shooting was somewhat justified. I mean, both sides seem to be saying that, at least that's what I'm hearing, but that hasn't stopped the unrest. What are these riots really about if it's not about this shooting?
Well, of course, and I think that's something that's been interesting, you know, in city after city, whether it be here in Milwaukee, and I've been here about 24, 36 hours, and so I'm not going to pretend to be the absolute expert on Milwaukee, right?
Sure.
But whether that be here in Milwaukee or in Baltimore or in Cleveland or in St. Louis, right, well, you know, one thing that seems clear after even just the first few hours of interviews in any of these places is that there's a deep distrust, a deep dissatisfaction, and an unrest that's been boiling beneath the surface for years or for generations in these places, right? And so any of these given incidents, whether it be the specific shooting, you know, in this case, one that the police are saying the body camera, which they have not released yet, right, but they're saying the body camera video shows him raising the gun. Even if that is the case, it seems as if the unrest here and the anger here is much more about a community that feels like it has been either taken for granted or abused, that it has these kind of deteriorating relationships, not only with the police, but with kind of the political establishment here by and large. And so that, you know, so again, it sometimes feels like a cop-out to say, you know, that it's about more than the individual shooting. But in all of these cases, they do often seem to be about much more than the shooting. As I'm talking to residents here, you know, many of them are talking about, you know, years of whether that be housing segregation, whether it be kind of economic stratification where, you know, jobs and resources and transit are all out in the suburbs and these communities, which were once kind of rich parts of the city here, have kind of been left with very little over the last few decades. And that kind of, you know, again, is something that can simmer and simmer and simmer for years and eventually boils over.
You know, what you're talking about is that there's a simmering beneath the surface, that it was like somebody had to do was strike a match and you've got a problem. And that's the same description of what we heard about going on in Baltimore. I'm wondering, in situations like this, why don't the police immediately release the video? If the video does vindicate the police officer and it shows clearly that the guy stepped about two steps away, as they describe it, turned toward him with a gun, that pretty much ends the discussion, doesn't it? Doesn't that calm the waters rather than inflame the waters?
It would, if that was what the video showed as clearly. And what we know, and again, all we know currently is what the police are telling us, which is that the video does capture this interaction and that the video clearly vindicates the officer. However, what we know from past experiences, it's very rare that these videos actually clearly capture the entirety of any of these situations, right? And so while it's being stated that, you know, the video clearly absolves the officers, what's probably more likely from our experience watching these videos is the video captures part of it, and perhaps it's not completely clear what happens. But I think that's the same question. You know, I stood on the street corner last night next to the friends and cousins of Seville Smith, the young man who was killed, all, you know, some of whom carrying guns at that very moment, you know, people who we talked a lot about their distrust for the police and you know, how they feel about this. And they were saying the exact same thing to me that you just said. They said, look, If Seville raised his gun on an officer, he deserved to be shot. But why won't they show us that video? They want us to just believe them.
Yeah.
Why won't they? If the video shows it, why won't they show
us? I mean, the idea of having these cameras is to resolve these issues once and for all, and to make officers act responsibly. If the officer indeed acted responsibly, it shuts down the discussion immediately, doesn't it?
It soothes people, right? You know, you have people who are traumatized. The guy who they grew up with, their cousin, their friend, that guy from down the street, got shot and killed, and all they know is what they've heard, what people are saying, right? And the police are telling them, well, no, but the video shows nothing, you know, that this was justified, and they're saying, okay, so show us the video.
But short of a video, Wesley Lowery, I mean, we still see people saying that Michael Brown had his hands up during the shooting in Ferguson. We still hear people saying the police officers killed Freddie Gray in Baltimore, even when the facts do come out, and even when it's Eric Holder doing the investigation, saying, no, this was actually justified action by the police. There's still riots and there's still buildings burning, so I've got to take issue with that suggestion.
Well, I mean, first of all, the unrest in those places both came out far before the release of any facts in either of those instances, right?
That's my point. They're going to riot whether the facts come out or not, and then when the facts come out, they continue to riot.
Well, no, there were no riots in Baltimore after the acquittals of any of the officers. That's not completely
accurate. Do you think
that
the people on the street in Baltimore believe that Freddie Gray's death was just merely accidental and the police didn't have a hand in it?
I believe almost no one believes that Freddie Gray's death was completely accidental.
There you go.
I mean, I think that requires a suspension of belief of the facts, right? I mean, I think that he's something being, and we set up a false premise here, right? Something not being a provable criminal act does not, in fact, mean that it is a completely innocent act, right? There's a large gap between what is legal and what is right. There's a large gap. The police officers say this all the time, right? There's a large gap between what is provably illegal and what is, you know, what should and should not have happened. I mean, like you hear this from the people in Baltimore all the time. They say, so you're saying no one was involved in the death of Freddie Gray? No, I mean, I think that any reasonable person watching the videos of his detention and knowing what happened knows that the officer certainly played some role in his death. Whether that counts to a crime or not is a different conversation.
Let me ask you another question, and I'm really asking you to help me understand something. You first set up exactly what was at play here in these riots in Milwaukee, you mentioned frustration with the political leadership or lack of leadership and the corruption therein, and I don't doubt that exists in Milwaukee. When you've got a major urban center like Milwaukee or Baltimore or New York City or Chicago, where it's basically been one-party rule forever, you end up getting corruption. Here's what I don't understand. Why does the African-American community, who suffers greatly because of that political corruption and the inability for the politicians they elect to do anything to help them out of their circumstances, why do they continue to say that Republicans are the racist ones and Republicans haven't earned their vote? Why do they keep voting for the same party that does nothing for them?
Well, I mean, I do think that sometimes, and again, this is kind of based on the people who I've talked to, and very often, I don't premise a lot of my interviews with people based on partisan paradigms, because that doesn't seem to be the most relevant thing to me when I'm talking to someone about why the gas stations burned down the street, right? But I think that, but I do think that very often, I mean, I don't know that partisan politics is something that overlays here, right? I mean, it's not in order to... In order to be elected, the city councilman of Sherman Park in Milwaukee, a nice white Republican would have to move to Sherman Park in Milwaukee, right? I mean, the people elect the people who run for office.
Well, there are plenty of Republicans who run who are African-American in Baltimore. They don't win. Let's face it, Wesley. What I'm saying is the people who you talk to who are burning down that gas station, they think the politicians don't care about them, right?
Yes. No, that is certainly.
And those politicians are all consistently, year after year, for many decades now, those politicians are all Democrats.
Because Democrats are the people who live in their community. I mean, I don't think that has. I mean, I don't know that that has anything. Again, if Scott Walker wanted to move to downtown Milwaukee and run to be the mayor of Milwaukee, you could have a different conversation. But while he's living out in the suburbs, or Paul Ryan's living out.
So you're telling me when an African American conservative Republican moves to the city and they live in the city already and they run and say, hey, let's try a different way. Those African American Republican conservatives are not called Uncle Toms. They are not called Oreos. They are not disparaged by the black leaders from the Democratic Party who live in those cities.
Sometimes they are. Sometimes they are not. But I also think that I don't know that most black Americans see this as a partisan political issue. I think that most Black Americans see, I mean, I think that if you can be unhappy with your elected leadership, or you can feel disaffected by your elected leadership, and that doesn't necessarily mean you think that the underlying ideology of that leadership is wrong.
No, I guess not. But
people
who
are elected are wrong.
I guess my point is they continue to keep voting for the same party that continues to fail them. Leslie Lowry, sadly, we are way over time, but I would love to continue this conversation another time. It needs to be had.